Welcome to Popcorn and Podcasting.
Yay, we're back. That was good.
Another episode of Popcorn and Podcasting.
Yay. Okay, so we'll start with our trivia. Last time our trivia was the
guy who plays Where the Red Fern Grows, Where the Red... Yes.
And who also played Joseph Smith in the first Vision movie. Who is he, and is he LDS?
And we did some... Yes and yes.
Wait. His name is Yes. His name is Stuart Peterson.
Yes.
And yes, we're pretty sure he's LDS, at least according to the internet.
We couldn't find any strong sources to confirm it, but there's, according to LDSfilm.com, he is.
Yeah.
Whatever exactly that is.
And also, we will put a link to it.
Yeah.
If you're even curious. There was like one more site.
I just want to go to the main site just to see what this site is. And so, yes, he's the one who played on the restoration video that missionaries use.
And I don't know how we...
One Man's Treasure. I haven't heard of that movie yet. From the producer of Passage to Zarahemla. Okay, so we'll put this link in the show notes.
Yeah.
And so that's the answer to our trivia question.
Yay. And so now we will move on to our talk. We have the second half of the talk by Lex de Azevedo.
Yep, and we're going to jump a couple of paragraphs back and then jump back ahead so we can remember what it was.
What we were talking about.
Talking about. This is Lex de Azevedo, who's giving this talk. LDS songwriter, both pop music and religious music, all kinds of stuff. Okay, he says, while many songs are bad because they stress the trivial and selfish things of the world, such as fame, wealth, and cheap thrills, the most objectionable of all focus on illegal drugs, illicit sex, violence, and Satanism. Let's look at these four aspects of popular music, taking examples from the recent rock music simply because that's what most young people today listen to.
Now, we already read the four things, we covered drugs last time. So, yes. If you want to hear about illegal drugs,
listen to the
music about illegal drugs, listen.
Or go to the.
Or read it for yourself in the talk.
Yeah.
Anyway, so now we are going to talk about music and sex.
Yeah.
And I'll. Do you want me to?
Sure.
Okay, so music and sex. Over 70% of all popular songs are about love. At least that's what certain studies have shown. Actually, many of those songs are about lust, the counterfeit of love. To make a list of groups who sing about lust and illicit sex is almost a list of who's who of rock music. A concerned adult leader once wrote me a letter about a half-hour ride with teenagers in a car. As they rode, the youth listened to their normal radio station. This station was not an adult or even a college age or punk rock oriented FM station, she wrote. It was the most popular AM station in town. And then she described the songs on the station played. Out of nine songs in that half hour, eight were about premarital or extramarital sex.
Holy cow.
What particularly disturbed me about these songs, that's more than 90%. Sorry. Yeah. She wrote that was
95.
What particularly
Sorry. I'm not a mathematician.
Well, there was... It's almost 90% because it was 8 out of 9.
Oh, wait, yeah. Well, that's a hard one.
What particularly disturbed me about these songs, she wrote, was the fact that I knew the very young listened to them over and over and over many times each day of the year.
Wow.
Songs and poems of adultery and fornication are nothing new. Every generation has had its fill of them. But in order to make their product more and more exciting and sell more songs, record producers have gradually added additional perversions to their traditional preoccupation with illicit sex. Today, songs containing references to homosexuality, transvestitism, sodomy, masturbation, sadomasochism.
This was in 1985.
I don't even know what that is, but I don't know if I want to know. Rape, prostitution, venereal disease, child abuse, and incest have all been added to the musical menu. Many groups use sex and nudity on album covers to help sell records. And some base their name and image on sexually descriptive words. Some groups and singers openly admit to sexual deviation. They seem to glory in their decadent image.
I was just thinking, wouldn't it be interesting if for one day everything was labeled according to absolute truth?
Exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Then a lot of, I mean, you'd go to a movie store and like 3/4 of them, well, maybe that's a big number, I don't know. But a ton of them, but probably majority, would have to say something like, you know, watch this if you want to destroy your soul. You know, things like that. Just because that's what they're portraying, that's what they're...
And they're glorifying. They're
glorifying
it.
You know? Pretty scary. Okay. Sexual immorality and drug usage has always gone on in secret, but never before in a society have they been the openly admitted and accepted norm. Within the last 10 to 20 years, we've experienced a revolution in the values of our society deems acceptable. Today, most of... Well, I'm having a rough reading day.
You always
are. I do. It's a
Friday
podcasting thing. Yeah, I was about to say Friday thing too, but it's Saturday.
Today's Saturday.
Today.
Well,
it's a weekend thing, that's it.
There you go.
Today, almost all former sexual taboos are considered light humor in most television shows and movies. Too true. Without ever subjecting these vital issues to a rational debate, many people have allowed their attitude towards sin to change from hatred and to endurance to pity to embracing. I'm convinced that of the many factors which have aided this revolution, music has been a major one. Mm. Very interesting. As for the future, it may safely be said that although the lyrics, titles, and names of the groups will change from month to month, illicit and immoral songs will continue to be made as long as they sell.
Mm. That's sad, you know, and it's young people that are listening to this stuff, and it's almost like minds are being poisoned, you know, before they even understand sex at all, their minds are being poisoned
by these wrong ideas about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's brainwashing.
Yeah, I've come into contact with a lot of people on the internet through like Facebook and Twitter that totally think the only purpose for sex is for pleasure. It's fun and it's recreation.
And we all have the right to do it.
Whenever you feel like it.
Whenever you feel like it.
And that is so wrong.
Yeah. That's satanic.
Yeah. Anyway, off the soapbox. next section. One of the four songs of violence. Much of the folk rock of the 60s and 70s carried a heavy political message. It was based on a certain youthful idealism with ultimate goals of racial equality, peace, and love. But that love soon turned into open sex, nudity, and drugs. And the messages of peace increasingly became messages of violence.
That's pretty sad how
it turned.
Yeah.
The anti
I could use this.
The anti-establishment tone of those earlier days had experienced a rebirth lately in the musical styles of new wave and punk rock. Unfortunately, many of these groups have picked up where the last generation left off. And that continues still. Remember, he gave this talk in 1985.
Yes. 24 years ago.
Violence and sex are their major messages. A member of a group that has been called America's foremost sex and violence band. What a lovely title.
Wow.
told a nationwide television audience, rock and roll has always been sexual. Rock and roll has always been violent. It has teeth. It will scratch your face off. That's why I like it.
Yeah, that's a twisted idea. Okay. Rock music may have always been violent, but it has become increasingly... may have always been violent, but it has become increasingly so in recent years. At concerts of one rock band, for example, dark hooded characters performed mock acts of violence on stage, imitating child abuse. Oh, that's horrid. During another number, the band endlessly chanted, "We don't need no education."
I think I know what band that is.
I think I know too. As children came on stage to destroy school desks and mannequins of teachers. That's horrid.
Yeah.
Album covers of various power rock
groups, and we're surprised when things like the Columbine School happen.
Yeah. I mean, when you have a group probably larger than the school population that's chanting, thinking about destroying their teachers. Yeah.
You know, it shouldn't come as a surprise that kids actually want to carry out those actions. And do.
Yeah, serious.
It's sad, but I can't... It's, you know, not surprising.
Yeah. Album covers of various power rock groups present people smoking pot and engaging in street brawls. One performer likes to taunt his audience with what he calls combat rock. He claims, "Rock is the perfect primal method of releasing our violent instincts." That's scary.
Yeah.
Many other groups also sing of violence and use it in their acts. Murder, child abuse, and torture are common themes, and concerts have become increasingly violent. You know what I think is kind of sad, too? I mean, if I'm not mistaken, I believe the scriptures say that one of the sins that has led many people, groups of people, to the fullness of iniquity, I think Noah's group might have been one of them, was violence, love of violence. And
bloodthirstiness.
Yeah, bloodthirstiness and all that. And in our society, obviously, there's not much opportunity to go out and kill people because you'd be thrown behind bars.
They're pretty good laws.
But I think there's
good laws.
But I think a lot of it's still there in, you know... If you're seeking out a movie because, you know, the action is just going to be so incredibly violent that it's exciting, that's...
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, you got to think, you know, be concerned about that if you find that.
Yeah, I think I would be concerned if someone told me that they wanted to go see a good bloody movie. Why?
Yeah. And usually they won't use those terms. They'll use terms like adventure and action and stuff like that. Which, of themselves, are probably just fine, but when, in reality, it's violence and so forth that they are going to see, that's a problem. I remember when I went to see the second Star Wars movie, the of the new ones.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember, you know, where, the Clone Wars, I think it is. I could barely sit through it, through the violent scenes, and I couldn't figure out what it was about it that was so bothering me at first, and I realized after. I mean, it was just this intense violence that was going on during the particular scene where I was like, I don't know if I can watch this, you know, and I don't know what it was different about it then. I don't know if that would bother me now or not, but I almost hope it would still bother me.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, next section, satanic songs. Moroni chapter 7, verse 17 tells us that anything that persuades us to do evil, such as the songs referred to in the previous sections, is ultimately of the devil. But unfortunately, several groups have progressed beyond merely trying to persuade us to do evil. By their own boasting, many have become heavily involved in the occult.
Occult.
In witchcraft, in black magic.
I don't know what it is, except that it's occult.
Makes sense. And in Satan worship itself. some groups use their music and their lyrics to spread this mysticism and demonology to their listening public.
If you want to read a good book about an example of how this is happening, especially among the youth, and it's a very good book, actually, read, it's called She Said Yes. And it's about a girl who lived through, was it Columbine, I think? Yeah, lived through Columbine, and
she was the girl that the guy pointed the gun to her head.
Said, "Do you believe in God?"
And she said yes.
And she said yes, and they killed her.
Yeah, so she didn't survive.
Did I say survive?
You did.
Oh, well, the people who saw it happen survived. Anyway, and she had had an experience, and it's really interesting how she got out of it, because it was a really scary thing. Her parents had no idea, but she was pretty deep into witchcraft and black magic type of stuff, and they had no idea she was involved in that. And once they discovered it, they had to take pretty drastic measures to get her out of it.
Yeah.
And luckily, things worked out that she turned her life around and became Christian and began attending, you know, Christian camps and things like that. Got more involved, and that's shortly after that Columbine happened. Well, that's a good place to read about that, just because it talks about some of the things that the parents were starting to discover that clued them in.
Yeah.
So for parents,
after they died,
it's a good thing to be aware of, that as well as drugs being this huge underground thing that most parents who have kids that do drugs don't know it or are in denial of it. And so they need, you know, something to be very aware of. Same thing with witchcraft.
Yeah, and you seem to think of, you know, of like witchcraft and stuff, that kind of stuff being old, you know. Teenagers now don't get into that, but they do.
And one of the scary things about it, you know, I mean, not only is it this fascination with blood and skulls and all kinds of weird things like that, but they actually have a fascination with, like, suicide and some of those, you know, things of killing. And so forth. And anyway, I don't want to dwell on that. But
it's scary.
So if you're a parent, you know, be aware that that is more prevalent than is generally known.
But be aware.
Yeah.
I don't know. Sometimes hearing about things like that makes me think, oh, man, what am I doing? I've had kids. I'm in trouble.
Just make sure you know your kids well and you stay close to them. If you're not, get close to them.
Okay. Symbols of witchcraft, cult worship, and sacrilegious imagery appear on album covers as well as in lyrics. One group dedicated its hit to an ancient Welsh witch. And a singer in concert has dedicated songs to all the witches in the world. Another group has built its entire career on Satan rock, using satanic symbols on t-shirts and album covers, and holding altar calls to Satan before some of their concerts.
Good grief. You know what's scary, too, is that people think, you know, when they just hear that kind of stuff, most people just think, whatever, they're just playing around with, you know, with just, you know, the dark, I don't know.
They don't really believe it. They're just trying to cultivate an image.
But you
got to
think about who's at the head leading it, you know, and where he's trying to get them.
Mm.
So, you know, don't take it lightly.
Yeah.
Okay. Some who have spoken out about today's popular music have sounded like extremists or alarmists. That's unfortunate because the problem is real. I have purposefully referred only to major groups in this discussion. These are not obscure singers no one has heard of. Music is one of the Lord's greatest tools in helping us build spirituality, but it is also one of the adversary's deadliest weapons. Using it, he creates sugar-coated poison that can slowly destroy all our brightest dreams and leave us spiritually wounded. The irony is that we take this deadly spiritual poison voluntarily into our homes, schools, and churches. We share it with our loved ones. We pay millions of dollars a year for the privilege of exposing ourselves to it. Like foolish Trojans, We open the gates of our strongholds and let the enemy in.
When a person eats unhealthy food, he often senses very little immediate effect. But the body is affected nevertheless. And if that diet is continued, the effect can be severe. Our physical bodies are the sum total of the foods we consume. The same is true of our minds and spirits. We are living in a telestial world, complete with telestial arts and entertainment, which can fill our minds with telestial images. Those telestial images often stimulate telestial thoughts, which, if not rejected, will lead to telestial behavior. The eventual result can be a telestial person. We would be more healthy spiritually if we never consumed any evil. Every bit harms us. The prophets of the Lord understand this process and have given us this sharp admonition. Come ye out from the wicked, and be ye separate, and touch not their unclean things. I believe that much of today's music can be counted among these unclean things.
Interesting. I thought it was interesting how it said, let's see, where did it say it? Will lead us to telestial behavior. The result can be a telestial person. Really, if you're, whatever kind of person you are, you will expose yourself as best you can. It's impossible to escape all telestial, everything, because we're in a telestial world. But what are you seeking? What are you spending your time focusing on
and doing? Your actions need to match your what you say, you know. If you say you want to be you want to be a good person, you want to be a celestial person, but you don't act like a celestial person.
Or at least don't try and don't put yourself in celestial experiences.
Then, you know,
you're not going to be there. And
you're not. It's not. No one's going to believe you, you know?
And if the music you listen to is blatantly telestial, maybe you ought to reconsider whether it's
no matter how good worth the listening. Beat is.
No matter how entertaining it is. In fact, the more entertaining it is, the more dangerous it is.
The harder it will be to let go of it.
Exactly. Okay, are we here?
Right there.
When we consider music's impact on us, and how many thousands of hours we listen to it throughout our lives, it seems wise to choose for ourselves and our families music which builds up our spiritual reserves rather than that which continually wears them down. It's easy to see that much of today's popular music, has a detrimental effect, but it is not so easy to help family members want to listen to something else. Here are some suggestions for parents. Oh, cool. Okay. The first thing is to become truly aware of what you and your children are listening to. Do the songs you have on the radio or record player promote or describe immorality in any of its forms? It may be that there's no problem in your home, or that you or your children may indeed be deeply attached to harmful music.
Okay. Mm-hmm. In evaluating the situation in your home, realize that most teenagers feel a great deal of pressure to be knowledgeable about the music scene. It answers some of their need for self-esteem and gives them the security that comes from identifying themselves with the group. Many teenagers use rock music as an escape from fears, problems, feelings of inadequacy, or boredom. Perhaps what you are seeing is only a symptom of the problem. That's interesting. So if you have teenagers that are listening to terrible music, that might be only a symptom. There might be a bigger problem.
It might, while you're worried about it leading them to do other things, it could be that they've gotten involved in other things and it's bleeding out in their music.
Yeah. Scary.
Yeah. Okay. Is that right? Teenagers? Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Teenagers. I have to read slowly because we just lost the page. There we are. Teenagers are often unaware that music can have a harmful spiritual effect. If you feel concerned about the music your teens are listening to, it may be helpful to explain what effect immoral music can have on our spirits. Teens are at a time in their lives when they are particularly, when they particularly need the guidance of the Holy Ghost.
Mm-hmm. They're making huge decisions.
You know what, too? That's an age group, too, where music is even more powerful than at other times in the life. I don't know if that's because of the emotional aspects of teenagehood or mm-hmm. what it is, but music is very powerful in their minds, more, probably 10 times more than most adults. And so that's something to keep in mind. Okay, and some kinds of music can deaden their receptiveness to spiritual promptings. Rather than simply establishing rules about what your youth can or cannot listen to, explain why you are concerned. Then encourage them to govern themselves. Interesting.
In the spirit of cooperation, sit down and set some limits. For example, stations A and B are totally off limits because they play an overabundance of offensive music. Offensive material. Other stations can be listened to only between the hours of whatever,
blank and blank,
PM. And the volume must not be so loud that you can hear it through a closed door and down the hall. The stereo belongs to the entire family, and we must take turns. Limits like these are only fair to the other members of the household, and they help the teenager become more accustomed to the idea of controlling his listening habits. Mm-hmm. This is totally different now in this day of
everybody's
iPods.
Everybody's got their own stereo that nobody
earphones.
Else can even hear.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you might want to be aware of what's in your kids' iPods. That could even be a rule. You know, you can choose what's in your iPod, but you've got to let mom and dad know what's on it. They've got to know.
iPod inspections
once
a month.
I think that's fair. Okay. Keeping the lines of communication open is much more important than any short-term success you might have in trying to alter your teenager's listening habits by being hard-nosed. Be careful not to ruin your relationship with him by attacking his music. Instead, unemotionally discuss the moral issues with him, tactfully making it clear what you think is right and wrong, and give him ample opportunity to express his opinions. That's a cool approach. Hopefully, as you reason with him, your teenager will come to share your concerns about offensive music and will be willing to moderate his listening habits. If not, keep communicating. Have a good relationship with him. Having a good relationship with him will bring more lasting benefits than forcing him to change his music.
The Lord has counseled, let virtue garnish thy thoughts unceasingly. Accordingly, then, our abandonment of immoral music is only half the battle. Cultivating a taste for uplifting and encouraging music in our homes is the necessary other half.
Which I think is a good reason to have music in your house and have good music in your house. If that's what your kids grow up hearing, that's what they'll grow to love.
Yeah.
And, you know, just like in both of our homes. We grew to like certain types of music and certain music groups simply because
that's what our parents listened to in our house. That's what our parents had in their house,
And if we've got good, clean, pleasant, beautiful music playing in our homes, our kids are going to grow up loving it. And they're not going to want anything else.
Yeah, and when they do hear the stuff that's degrading, and they'll
repel
be like, what is this? This is terrible.
And that's probably a good reason to keep up on more recent, modern music of good quality as well. Because once they get to high school and so forth, they will be wanting to listen to the modern
stuff. Yeah, they'll want to be keeping up with the music scene.
And if you have been keeping up on it too, and keeping it positive and good, on your side, what you've been playing.
Yeah.
Then they'll
feel like they're up on it.
And they'll want to.
Plus, they'll think we're cool, too.
Yeah. My parents are awesome.
My parents listen to this band.
Which, with the internet and everything, it's not hard to do. It's not hard at all.
Yeah.
You don't have to go buy cassettes all the time and things like you used to.
Yeah.
You know, now, you don't even have to buy CDs, you know? Either download the MP3 or just listen to it on your internet radio.
Yeah. Let's see. In trying to help your children develop a broader base, expose them to a variety of the world's great music. To create a small library of good music, talk to a music teacher or a knowledgeable neighbor. Ask for a list of popular classics that are especially appealing to children and young people. You might also introduce primary songs, hymns, and the emerging LDS popular music. Oh, yeah.
That's when it was emerging. Now it's fully underway.
We're going to do a bunch of links to some LDS popular music that we like.
Oh, that's a good idea. We should.
Okay, we will.
Okay. We both worked at Deseret Book, so we may be up to 5 years behind by now.
That's true.
But 5 years isn't bad in terms of, you know, people are still playing stuff from 1985. You know, My Turn on Earth and all the stuff that Lexdia has available. If your music is still playing... I'll Build You a Rainbow. I'm sorry. You're behind the times.
Yeah, if you think that's
you
LDS.
You're listening to oldies.
If you think that's popular LDS music of today, it's not. LDS
that
music.
That means you're not up on the popular stuff. And the popular stuff is beautiful.
It's lovely.
And is...
A good report.
And praiseworthy. Okay.
End of cheese.
Let's see. How far do we got to go? Because we're...
Oh, there we go.
Oh, we're almost there. Okay.
We're almost done.
We'll go to 35 minutes maybe today. Okay.
Okay, let's see. Oh, yeah, and Sirius Sacred Music into the home. This not only provides an alternative to the telestial music of the world, but it also tends to focus the mind on celestial concepts, encouraging celestial desires and behaviors. Don't surrender your stereo to your teenagers. As parents, take your turn enjoying your favorite music from the family record and tape collection. If possible, provide your children with formal training on a musical instrument. Take them to local performances of good music. They will particularly enjoy a concert featuring music they have already learned to appreciate with you at home. Sing together regularly as a family, especially on family nights, holidays, and special occasions. The object isn't to make musical geniuses of your children, but rather to enlarge their understanding and appreciation of good music of all styles.
It's not always easy to change musical habits, but if a certain form of music is hampering our spiritual health and development, in whatever subtle and quiet way, it must be given up in favor of music that will build spiritual strength. That makes me think, too. You can't empty... I'm trying to think of a good analogy, but basically, if you're trying to clear the devils out of the classroom, you've got to fill up the seats with angels or whatever, you know, or somebody good in their place, because you can't just kick out the bad music and say okay, you know, because the stereo will not be empty. They're teenagers. They're gonna listen to music. The thing is, you can help replace the music with better music.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, okay. That doesn't mean we must give up all... Let's see. That doesn't mean that we must give up all popular music. We must be willing to seriously control our listening and shun the groups, songs, and music that are spiritually harmful. Especially these days, it's nice because music is usually bought by the song, not by the
album. You don't have to buy a whole CD.
Not knowing what's on it.
Yeah, for one song that you like, when all the others might be like... Ugh.
Yeah,
but it's a really nice thing. And I also, there was one thought I thought to add.
You thought to add?
Yeah. No, I'm forgetting it. It's going. Okay. When you're in the act, when you're listening to music, you need to have enough self-control that if at any point in the listening you realize that the song's not the greatest, you need to have the self-control to stop listening, to turn the player off, turn X out of the website.
The interesting thing about that, too, is as much as you don't want to do it while you're listening to it, the moment you stop it, you'll be like, that wasn't so hard.
Yeah.
It wasn't a big deal. We'll just go to another song that's great. Yeah. You know?
It takes a lot of self-control because you want to hear the end of the song. You want to hear it resolve.
And you want to experience the whole emotional experience.
Same thing with movies, you know. If you're halfway through a movie and you realize it's kind of a dumb movie, a bad movie, you know, it's so hard to turn it off in the middle, to walk away out of the theater in the middle.
But once you do, you're like,
I'm glad I did that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know what, too? You demand your money back and they'll usually give it to you.
Yeah.
You say, you can go in and say, I didn't realize there was nudity in that movie and I'd like my money back. Now, if they don't give it to you, well, at least you made your statement.
Yeah.
But if you did, take your money and go buy a pizza or something.
From experience.
Or go to another movie.
Know from experience that works.
Yeah. And it sends a message to the movie place and the people at the thing.
You just lost my money because...
You lost my money because you... Because of that, that portrayal. Okay, anyway. One more paragraph here. Do you want to finish it up?
Yeah. Music is such an important and powerful part of our lives that we should consider our listening habits thoughtfully and prayerfully. You can pray about music.
Good thought.
Yeah. Sorry. You can pray about anything. Heavenly Father doesn't care. Nothing is too trivial to pray about.
Yeah, very true.
You know, lots of people think, oh, you know, this isn't a big thing. Heavenly Father doesn't care. But if you say a prayer to Heavenly Father and say, you know what? I was thinking about listening to this song or, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Just talk to him. Anyway.
It'll help a lot.
If we remember our eternal goals, we will seek out music that will help us rather than hinder us.
Very cool. Okay. So, that is our podcast for today.
I guess no trivia?
Let's come up with something real fast. Ready? Okay, our trivia question is, name five... Wait a minute, we're going to be listing these in the show notes. Without looking at the show notes.
name five that are not in the show notes.
There you go, that's a good one.
Five LDS musicians.
That's okay. Five LDS musicians who are popular today. That means, okay, so Michael McLean could qualify, but we'll just disqualify him right now.
Because he's
from the old era, but he's kind of kept with the times a little bit. But he doesn't count. Janis Kent Perry doesn't count.
No offense to them.
They're fabulous music. I love them. But because they were popular back at the time of when I'll Build You a Rainbow came out, they just don't count because...
Yeah.
We're trying to show people there are popular LDS music today, the new artists. Anyway, okay, so that's your trivia. Five. And thanks for listening.